Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. Kevin, it is the first ever outdoors edition of the podcast. I am out on my patio right now. Did not get the proper clearances I was looking for inside in terms of noise and whatnot. So we're going to gamble with the neighbor's dog and see how it goes. Hello.
Hopefully there's no typhoon. As long as that's not around, we're good, I think. It sounds good from my end.
Don't you mean a tsunami? Get it? So speaking of natural disasters, we are recording this without proper clearances inside the Olsen household because there was a Windhorst wave. Is that the right way to go? It's not a Woj bomb because Woj didn't do it. ESPN's Brian Windhorst reported late Thursday night, recording this a little under an hour before the news happened. Is reporting with Tim Bontemps that the Phoenix Suns have had discussions with the Oklahoma City Thunder about All-NBA point guard Chris Paul. They've had trade discussions. Within the report, there really wasn't that much substance to it. Sometimes with these stories, you will get details on what could be included. For example, the Luke Kennard story back in February, we at least like kind of knew that it was like Eli Okobo, their future first-round pick, and then I think Javon Carter. We didn't really get anything in here. The only note is that talks have been ongoing and continue to gather traction, but there is no deal imminent. That is the latest on that. But before we get to our initial thoughts on like what a deal would look like, it's pretty obvious what the deal would look like, but just our thoughts on how we feel about a potential Chris Paul trade. What are your thoughts on just the report as a whole? Because this is the first real report of the off season. We've been told for months that this is going to be a crazy off season. And the first lick of anything is a Chris Paul trade potentially happening. So pretty big, Kevin.
After we spent all that effort to look into these draft prospects and they might just trade number 10 away. that was my thought, but anyway, no, I mean, that's significant one because we know that the Thunder and Chris Paul are not in the same timeline, if you will. And so he's an obvious trade candidate. And the most interesting part is like the Suns don't operate where they're calling people all the time. You know, they're not calling people, hey, is that guy available? I'm sure they knew this thing had to have been like, okay, do we want to go after him? We know he's available. And that's probably where it stands as far as like, not being imminent. They probably have called about him and said, what would you want from our roster and that kind of stuff. That's kind of where I feel like it is right now.
Kevin, would you go as far to say that Chris Paul's availability is one of the worst kept secrets in the league? Is that how you could phrase it?
Yeah, exactly. So I think the Suns have probably just checked in and we're at that point where I'm sure the Thunder are like, I have no idea what those guys are doing. They might send us an offer, you know, close to the draft. And just so we're clear, I believe there's still a trade. You can't make trades right now. And I read in Mark Stein's newsletter that maybe they opened that up a few days before the draft. But so right now, like, they can't do anything. So I wouldn't expect any news on that front. But there's going to be quick action, you know, a few days before the draft. So keep an eye out on when that date kind of will open things up.
Exactly. This isn't a case of following breadcrumbs to find out that there's a possibility Oklahoma City could be looking to rebuild. There are reports dating back to the start of last season that they were really looking to continue what they built, which was these first round picks they got in all these deals, including Paul George and Russell Westbrook. And there's just been reports of like Gallinari, Adams, and so on, Paul being guys that they're willing to trade and that they're looking towards the future with this team. And if we needed any more indication of that being true, Billy Donovan essentially left because he did not decide to re-up with the Thunder just basically because they were going in different directions. He was looking for a change of pace, a different team. And that just kind of points towards him not really wanting to go to like an exact, like a team that is about to blow things up. Like they haven't even started a rebuild yet, really. They haven't even gotten going. So he kind of saw the writing on the wall there and left. So obviously this makes sense from the Thunder perspective. This is not just random rumors. And the funny thing about saying that is Chris Paul suddenly became a pretty heavily discussed name with the Suns the past couple of weeks. And really all it took was him being brought up in a couple of different places. One of them was Bill Simmons' podcast when he had Zach Lowe on. They both kind of presented the Suns as an intriguing fit for Paul as a potential trade destination, but there was never anything reported at all. We're linking him to the team at all. The closest we got was Gambo on the air, not shutting them out of the Chris Paul sweepstakes, if there even are Chris Paul sweepstakes. So this is like the first step we've gotten there. They are just discussions for now. So we'll see. The Luke Kennard trade seemed even closer than this one, and that one didn't happen right before the trade deadline. So like I said, we'll see. My instant reactions are just two things. One, Chris Paul is an amazing basketball player. Even if he's 35 years old, he just made second team All-NBA last year. You do not make second team All-NBA by accident. Maybe he should have been third team instead of second team. Maybe he should have barely made third team. But if you're being considered for All-NBA at all, that means you're one of the best players on the planet at your position. And that's what he is. He was the best clutch player in the league last year. It wasn't close. Zach Lowe's written a ton about this in the past season of how dominant he was in closing time and just basically won games. He did one in Phoenix this year that you guys might remember. I remember covering that game and writing about it after and just saying, yeah, Chris Paul just did Chris Paul things for 5 minutes and then the game was over and no one else was able to match him on that, even Book on that night. He is a great player, and we'll get to like Rubio and Oubre here in a second. But the other thing that I'll add, and what we have been hinting at and what I've been kind of just basically saying the past couple of months, is that you look at what happened with this team in the bubble. You look at the way that they have been marketing what happened in the bubble as a quote-unquote breakthrough, and them having $230 million worth of renovations slash a new practice facility coming up. It makes complete sense that they would want to turn all of this into one thing combined at once and make a real jump as a team. But in order to make a real jump as a team, they're going to have to make a significant move that is probably considered bold and some will see as foolish. Vince Murata had a great line on the Bickley and Murata show today where he said in his 40 years of like observing the Suns as like both like a fan and a media member, their ascent has always come from a move that was questioned at the time. And you can just like obviously like go back to like Charles Barkley and Steve Nash and like all these other ones, like I guess drafting Amari maybe could be thrown in there. I don't really think that's what he meant. It was more Nash and Barkley, but to his point, this is kind of one of those moves again. And again, with how heavily I was joking during the bubble, how much we heard the transformation and how you just see it everywhere. This is clearly something they want to, like they want to have a good team with this and like really build off of a very expensive remodeling job and transformation, literally, of the arena in a new practice facility, which they should. I'm not saying they're wrong in thinking that, but it could lead to some that's the part of this where I kind of say I wouldn't be surprised if they were viewed as the quote-unquote losers of this deal if it were to happen, if they were to include number 10 and a future first, two first-round picks. Like, I Cam Johnson maybe in the deal. Like, I don't want to rule anything out just because I don't want to say they're desperate necessarily, but they have a reason to, they have reasons to push the pace a little bit more going just beyond the fact that like Devin Booker needs to win and this is his sixth season. Am I reading too much into the tea leaves there, Kevin, or do you think that there's some substance to the fact that they could be maybe a bit too aggressive this offseason? That's not me saying I don't want the Chris Paul trade. We'll get into that in a bit.
No, I think you're right. I mean, to me, it says a lot that this is a real thing, apparently. You know, we saw the team get rid of its G League team, and that was like a major red flag to me about their willingness to spend a little bit of money to develop, to have, you know, coaches to try new things, to try new analytical things and experiment. But at the end of the day, it matters what's happening on your NBA club. And, you know, James Jones probably has, like, I guess we could call it an old school approach. Like, you put good players on that floor, you have a good coach, you have young guys that are going to get better, and you hit on your draft picks and you draft guys who you know are going to contribute, even if it's as an eighth man, as a seventh man, like Cam Johnson, then that's a winning formula. And my big thing in this is when you consider making this deal is going to be very pricey, they're going to hit the luxury tax if they field a full basketball team, then it's what you're giving away, because you've got to keep draft picks around. You've got to get hit on those to build around it over the next 2 years, as long as Paul's around, just to have bodies. Like, they can't just trade a bunch of draft picks for this old guy, because what do you have when you come off his contract in 3 years, you know? So I think that's the big thing I'm looking at. I'm also looking at OKC notoriously gets amazing trades their way. And whether that's too many draft picks, whether they get Mikal Bridges or something that you don't think is on the table as a Suns fan, that really is part of why you want to trade for Chris Paul, then that's, to me, that's where you get into some muddy water where there's a lot of risk in it. Beyond dealing the two guys that I think you agree that will have to be in this deal to get it done. And as a starter, like, just to get the numbers lined up.
Yeah, Kevin Pelton just posted like 900 words on how this trade could potentially work. And the news broke like an hour ago. So, I mean, maybe they got a heads up like 3 hours ago and he started working, but that's kind of weird. My spidey senses are tingling after that. I'll say that, Kevin.
This has been, Hollinger brought it up.
Yeah.
Legit, and we laughed it off, and Gambo didn't shut it down. Like, this has been a thing for a few weeks, so I'm sure they have a good head start on this.
Yeah, you're right. Let's talk about the trade itself, and that's kind of what Pelton gets into here. I'm going to kind of skim it as we go along, but basically the trade would have to include Ricky Rubio and Kelly Oubre, because the Suns have to match salary, and Chris Paul makes $41 million next year, I believe, $41.3 million next year, and then he has a $44 million player option. That is not I'm saying that correctly. I did not misspeak. $41 million this year, $44 the year after that. He makes a absolute metric ton of money. With that in mind, and the Devin Booker being on a max contract, it really just comes down to Ricky Rubio and Kelly Oubre being a part of the deal. As Pelton notes in his piece, the good news for the Suns is that they are able to match salary if they are able to throw in non-guaranteed contracts like Cheick Diallo, Eli Okobo, or Cameron Payne. And that is important for them because they could effectively spend all of their caps. They could operate like a team with cap space during free agency, do all their free agent stuff, sign all those players, and then execute the Chris Paul trade. We're going to get into that a little bit later and the dynamic of that, because there's obviously some questions that need to be asked of how much money the Suns are willing to be spend. Would they consider being a tax team? And so on. It might not take them that far into the, like, they might not go into the tax or anything like that, but the luxury tax, but they would be over the cap for sure. And there's a question of how willing they are to go that far given recent events. With that in mind, I have been, Kevin, I've been the number one person on the Twitter website, kind of just reminding everyone that when Ricky Rubio and Devin Booker played together, the Suns outscored teams by 7.3 points per 100 possessions. I looked it up, and then among starting backcourts that played at least 1,000 minutes together last year, that ranked top five in the league. And that's like including Eric Bledsoe and Wes Matthews with Giannis. So in terms of actual, like, legitimate backcourts doing the heavy lifting, Rubio and Booker were just one of the best in the league last year. And the reason that they were a bad team was primarily due to the play behind those guys. So I hesitate with moving on that to just, like, as a proposal overall, like just trading Ricky Rubio in general. You finally have some stability here. You finally have something that's going decently well, and I would just argue flat out well. I don't think I'd need to add the decent qualifier for me, at least saying it. But with that in mind, it's Chris freaking Paul. And if the price is Kelly Oubre, and Ricky Rubio, and you move back from 10 to 25 in the draft, Oklahoma City's pick is at 25. I think I would do that. Would I do 10 straight up? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not crazy about this draft, and it doesn't seem like something that should stall out their plans. I think that's another question where I unfortunately have to cop out and just say I would need to know what their plans are for upgrading the roster elsewhere, because that could be a pick that could actually be someone who has to play for them, depending on the way this deal goes and what their plans are to sign other guys and so on. What's your initial read in terms of a deal and what it would look like and what you think about it?
So the first thing is, what does Ricky Rubio do better than Chris Paul? I'm not sure there is one.
I'm not sure. Like, in terms of like passes, in terms of the passes that he can make, he's better, but that's I'm not saying he's a better playmaker. I'm not saying he's a better pick and roll player, like nothing like that, but like his ability to make passes, and like passing is a very, it's a thing that I talk about loosely. Like I'm just talking about like the variety of passes that he can make. But I mean, like, Chris Paul is also a wizard with the ball. So maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but I think that's the only place you can argue. But other than that, I think you're on. I just meant to stop you because you,
right.
You were going to say nothing. And I just wanted to clarify. Maybe that, but yes. And but to correct that and go in the direction of, he's Chris freaking Paul, the point guard, he's an incredible offensive player, and Ricky Rubio is just kind of all right. So
yeah, that's a major upgrade. And then I think the big thing that people can't, based on texts and Twitter timeline, is people can't get off, like, Kelly Oubre is an important part of this team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, man, it's, look, if you think the Suns are going to upgrade a power forward, they already have two wings. We think like Bertans, Jeremy Grant, whatever it is, that's probably where they're going to spend their money. So that kind of takes away a need for one of those guys. And I know Cam is not Kelly Oubre Jr. and Mikal might not be him offensively, but there were a lot of good things that say that the Suns will be just fine. And what's the point in rolling with Rubio, Kelly Oubre, even if you get in the playoffs? I can't see them getting out of the first round. I could see them getting out of the first round, maybe, depending on matchups, if they had Chris Paul. So that's how I'm thinking of it. Now, as far as the draft picks, Pelton points this out. It's a good thing that Chris Paul, like, the market's not going to drive up extremely for him. And Pelton says that, and that number 10 might be too much. So maybe a future first that has light protections or something, that might be enough to get it done. And I'm with you with the, I would even consider 10 and swap 25. I just want another body coming back. I don't want to lose 2 for 1. And if you get a Desmond Bane at 25 or something like that, that's really helpful. So I think, again,
even if we have to be a little bit more realistic, and let's say all the draft, like, guys we absolutely adore are gone, and it's like all this is fake news that's been them ranked in the 30s. Even someone like Robert Woodard or Isaiah Joe, who we've talked about, like, that's another body, as you phrase it. Yeah. I think that's an important way of putting it. It doesn't have to be someone like Desmond Bane or Graham Riller, who we, like, project as someone who could play, like, good NBA minutes right away. Like, I don't think it has to be even someone like that.
No, 25 is still – I would really go at 25 if they really wanted 10. And if that's going to get it done, then if you have Chris freaking Paul, as you say, then, yeah, that's a reasonable deal to me. And that might be selling a little too much, but it's not, like, the extreme what – like giving up Mikal Bridges or giving up 2 first-round picks. So
I agree. I agree with a lot of what you said. I think that, again, the only reason that I would do 10, I would include 10, just like straight up, let's say it's Ruby, like the matching salaries plus number 10. The only reason that I would do that is knowing for sure that, like, we've got some free agency business cooking already, and that we're good. Like, we're 9 deep already, and we're going to be ready to roll. That power forward's coming in. One of those 2 bigs is coming back. There's another wing somewhere mixed in there with a mid-level exception or whatever it is, and you're good. Let's talk about the Thunder's perspective really quickly before hitting on Kelly, who, like, we should hit on a little bit more. the Thunder would do this, as Pelton wrote, because they might not do much better. And the reason why this deal is so appealing to them is because if you've ever played NBA 2K and tried to trade a contract that is worth $30 or $40 million, you'll do like Trade Finder, and what teams will often like send you is two salaries that are like $15 million each. And then those guys like add up to the value of that big salary you're trying to trade. But now it's easier to trade those two guys separately as opposed to that one guy with such a humongous contract, because that 41-44, that's no joke in terms of the size. It's one of the biggest contracts in the league. So them being able to get Rubio and Oubre, who are two guys that are easily tradable, like they could move Oubre in a heartbeat for, I'm not sure if like it's a first round pick in the lottery, but like a decent first round, like a half decent first round pick, I would like to think.
For a playoff run, yeah, that's huge.
Oh, a playoff team would give up Oubre for their pick in the 20s and like a heartbeat in either draft. As far as Rubio, like he still has value. He's coming off a very good season. Teams are going to look into the shooting more and really like what they saw there. And like younger teams, I think like Atlanta has been floated by like a couple of people just in terms of like a possible destination for him. Like he's proven here that he was part of a effort to change things, and it worked. And he had a large part to do with that. So I think those are just two appealing pieces, and like 10 to 25, like that matters. And again, all it takes is Oklahoma City liking a certain dude. I'm sure even in this draft, there's someone that they like in that late lottery, mid lottery range that they would find worth moving up for and taking there. So I think I agree with you there on the price, but we should discuss Oubre, because I think the number one mistake people make about trading Kelly Oubre in their head is that they think of Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson replacing them. What they don't think of is that the Suns immediately now have just two wings. And people like to say, okay, they can just draft Devin Vassell. They can just draft Desmond Bane. They can just draft Aaron Nesmith. Okay, well, now you're playing like a rookie in like semi-important minutes all of a sudden. Like now he's your first wing off the bench, this rookie that you're supposed to trust right away. And look, those rookies could come in and play well right away. You're also looking at Cam and Mikal and relying on them more, because Kelly – in my opinion, Kelly was their best wing last year. That's a hot take to a lot of people, but I just flat out think he was their best player. I think people are really forgetting how great he was in a handful of games. He won them games in a handful of games. And like we've talked about this for years, and you've brought this up more than me even, is like they go as he goes. And when he played well, they were really hard to beat pretty much any night since he got here. So he's important. Now, if they can sign a power forward, like one of those names you mentioned, I've written about Bertans and Grant on the site already. I'll have something on Christian Wood up tomorrow or Thursday. Those are potential names they could look at. And now you have probably Cam coming off the bench. Okay, that's a lot more suitable. But you still can't overlook just on the court first. And then second of all, I mean, Kelly is, in my opinion, if you were to ask me who the most popular player on the Suns is, I would actually pause for a second before saying Devin. I would have to think, like, is Kelly more popular than him with the fans? Just being able to judge how they react to everyone, not only in person, but online, I really do think it's close. I think Devin's play in the bubble probably cemented him being that guy, but I think it was close. And that's like, obviously, in the grand scheme of things, like, it's fan reaction. It's going to hurt. You get Chris freaking Paul, whatever. But also, he got close with the guys in this locker room. Like him and DeAndre Ayton made the Valley Boys thing. The Valley Boys thing became a huge hit. Book praised him time after time two seasons ago when he helped turn around their season, which really was, if you look at like the real turning point of the trend and the trajectory of this team going up, it wasn't like the bubble. It wasn't really last season. It was when they got Oubre. And they weren't like 15-5 with him or whatever that season, but it was clear they were a different team with him, and he was one of their best players, and he changed the energy in their locker room. Like, I felt it in the locker room that it was different when he got there. I think I can say that for myself.
Were the waves different?
I think, like, waves are waves. You know, nature's nature. Rubio, he's close with Rubio, who's obviously gone now, but, like, that's still one of the most important, like, bonds on the team, and Ricky has gotten close with a lot of these guys. I think Ricky has made DeAndre better, and that's where we can get into, like, how – what's the Chris Paul DeAndre Ayton dynamic, which I'm personally terrified of. I think that's more of a conversation to have once the trade actually happens, because I don't think that's a reason to not do the trade. But yeah, I mean, that's my I'll say 14 cents because 2 cents is way too small of a number to represent how long I just talked on Oubre. And I just think that it's not as simple as like Mikel and Cam 8-0 in the bubble. It's just not that simple.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking Ryan McDonough in the front office, that was his flaw, right? He saw these guys as assets. He saw the contracts coming off the books, but like fabric of locker room, this trade is that's completely changing the personality, I guess you could say, of the locker room, because Ricky was the quiet leader who was just calming, a calming presence, I would guess you could say. Oubre obviously was always positive, bringing the energy on the court. And so with Chris Paul, if you didn't know, he's a really tough guy to get along with. I mean, if you look, like if you're asking me the Suns trade for Chris Paul a year ago when he was coming off his season with the Rockets, I would be really scared because it just didn't jive. And I know that's a really different system where it's him and Harden trying to take like share 90% of the ball handling. Like that's very different than what the Thunder did. And Chris Paul showed with the Thunder, he could play off the ball. He could not dominate it as much and he could still make a great impact on the game. So I think that really is a little comforting, and so is his relationship with Monty, but it's going to be different. It's going to be, they're taking losses a lot harder. They're getting down or, you know, pressing more. I guess you could say, I could see this team, you know, you get off to a bad start to start a season when you're getting to know each other, and that people are just pressing because there's all these expectations. And he's just this really intense competitor. So that's different. And you lose those personalities in the locker room. I think that's important. DeAndre is a huge part of this too. But yeah, I guess getting back to Kelly real quick, it is a big loss, and that's why it's sacrificing the hope and changing a lot to hope that you get better. And hoping that this player who is really good still, even though he's aging, can change that. So it's a risk for sure.
Okay. I'm really glad you brought up the first part, because we should at least like mention that for people that don't know. When Chris Paul's on a team, it's his team. There's not whispers, there's shouting from Houston that like there was like his relationship with James Harden and Mike D'Antoni, like it eventually kind of fell apart. There are rumblings of that kind of throughout his career, not necessarily in like the coach killer vein at all, but he is like an ultra intense competitive guy. This is like where you get into like generations and like their thoughts on it, but I'm sure like an older generation will look at this and say like Chris Paul is exactly what DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker need, whereas someone from like our age group might look at like, do Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton want to be bossed around and yelled at by Chris Paul the whole time? And like that gets into the argument, like, do they truly want to be great if they're not willing to get yelled at for Chris Paul for a while? But you get what I'm saying. Like there's some potential like fireworks that can erupt from that, that can come from that. Like that has to be taken into consideration. Cause again, he's just like such an incredible player. It's one of those things where there's a dissonance, if that's the right word, always. And just like a difference in general with a very good to great player coming to your team. And once they get there and you see them every single play, how amazing they are. Cardinals fans are experiencing this right now with DeAndre Hopkins, realizing that he is just as good as everyone talked about. And they were probably underselling how awesome he is. He's an incredible football player. And Chris Paul is an amazing player. Like I just cannot say enough how good he is. And like the only part of this argument that we kind of have left in terms of like, do you do this trade or not, I think is the longevity argument. But something we've brought up on this podcast throughout all of last season was Ricky Rubio's inconsistencies, him getting nicked up, and then his level of play really changing kind of based on how long the Suns had to rest. And he just looked like a completely different player, not completely different player in the bubble, but I'll never forget the Knicks game when he came back from his child being born. And like, you can say like it's dad's strength and make the meme jokes and everything, but just getting a couple of days away, he just looked like completely different and refreshed. And then obviously in the bubble, it was more of the same. So I just think there are longevity concerns, even with Rubio for the 2 years of his deal, something I wrote about when they signed him. So those are there with Chris Paul, and Chris Paul was just all NBA last year. So even if Paul like declines heavily in like the second and final year of those 2 years left, there's an argument to be made that like that player is probably better than Rubio is at that stage anyway. That's at least what I think, Kevin. I don't know about you, but that's where I am.
Yeah, I agree with that. They are really on the same trajectory as far as like where they are in their careers. It feels like, even though Rubio's, you know, a lot younger to me. But yeah, I think to your point about personalities, like Chris Paul, I think could get along with Devin Booker. Devin really respects him, I believe, just based on what we saw on Twitter and all that stuff. But DeAndre is the big one for me, because you could say he's going to make him better on the court. Obviously, you know, throwing lobs, he's a great passer. But it's when he misses a defensive assignment or just slacks off for a second and Chris Paul gets into him. We know that DeAndre...
You mean when he jumps up and down and yells at him like he did at Dwight Howard?
Yes. We know.
Looks like a seven-year-old who didn't get their candy for the day.
We know, like, DeAndre, like, has those moments where he has a bad play or two and then it just snowballs. And he's got to get that out of his game. But, like, is he going to get it more?
Yeah.
Is it going to get even worse if Chris falls on him? Or is there are moments when he does respond to screwing up well. So it just.
Some people
it'll be
might
interesting
be.
To see.
I think some people might be, like, looking off the notion, like, how could he not get better with Chris Paul? It's like, I just don't think you're really taking into consideration enough like mental psyche and like mental makeup and those types of things. And that isn't to say anything negatively about DeAndre. I'm just saying someone in general who has shown that they're inconsistent in their play, like it can't just get better. It can certainly like not either not improve or get worse. Like don't act like that's not a possibility, because it certainly is. People are going to act like it's not a possibility and just act like it's a foregone conclusion that Aiden's going to be better, like better off getting yelled at by Chris Paul all the time. Like again, I'm trying to emphasize this. Like, the dude yells a lot and he complains to referees all the time. Like, this is who this guy is. And, like, I love him for it. I adore the point god and will always refer to him as such, because he is, in fact, the.
He was ranked number 3 in his recruiting class. And you know who was number 1 that year, Kellen?
LeBron?
No, Mustafa Shakur as a point guard.
Oh, Mustafa, of course. Wow. I had to have known that was a wildcat nugget. Wasn't he the draft after? Was it 04? Yeah, I think he was 04. He was the draft after LeBron.
Yeah.
Okay. One last point I should bring up. Zona on Suns Twitter, he's at AZ Sports Zone, has been all over this for months. In that Monty Williams coached Chris Paul in New Orleans, which you mentioned, but Jeff Bauer drafted Chris Paul in New Orleans in 2004, and then James Jones ran the Players Association with Chris Paul. So there are connection. All you are 3 for 3 in terms of drawing connections there, and why the basketball side of this would be completely up for it in terms of the basketball leadership, I should say, why they would be completely up for this trade. And there really isn't any other argument against it. In fact, again, like the transformation thing, I kind of lean in another direction where they might be willing to give up even more than they should, just because they believe in him as much as they probably should, to be honest. Like, if you were around Chris Paul and watch him play that much, you would really believe in him. Have you been able to pick up on this cap thing really at all and kind of like dissect it here as we go? Because essentially what Pelton has said, and this is where we have to mention the if the Suns spend it, choose to spend this much money, but because of the dynamics of this trade, the Suns could, as I said earlier, they can take the $33 million the number for Chris Paul's, and ESPN's Bobby Marks said, if a team is acting over the cap, $33.05 million is the magic number in outgoing salary when it comes to Chris Paul. So you have to get to $33.05 as a team over the cap when you are trading for Chris Paul. So essentially what the Suns could do, as Kevin Pelton writes in his piece, somewhere around $13, $17, $15, $20 million, whatever the number winds up being that they are under the cap, they can spend that money. You can go sign Davis Bertans for $16 million a year. You can go sign Jeremy Grant for that much. You can go sign other players for that much. You can use your room and level exception. Like, you can do all that kind of stuff and then be a team that's basically over the cap from then on. You could even go as far as like signing a high level free agent like Bertans or Grant or Wood, and then go over the cap even more with the rights on Dario Saric and Aaron Baines. Like, you can do that. You can spend that much money. then you can do the Chris Paul trade as well. And then that's an extra like 8 to 10 million, whatever that is. I think the math is like 8 million in terms of his salary for next season, how much more you'd be adding on the trade itself. That element of this is fascinating because, well, for a myriad of reasons, Kevin, but for one, like we have a pretty good indication that free agency has been going on for a while now. Like this is not just magically starting on the 20th. It has been probably conversations have been taking place for a while now. People are going as far to speculate like a lot of deals are probably done already. It wouldn't shock me. But the question is, Kevin, would they be willing to, and they being Robert Sarver, would they be willing to really spend that much money? Would you really be able to go that far? But I think the thing to understand here is, again, like let's just say you have $15 million in cap space. You spend that all on one of those free agents like I mentioned, and then you spend $5 million room mid-level on some guy. Now you're looking at your $5 million over the cap. You trade for Paul. You're only like $13 to $15 million over the cap, so it's not that crazy. But it is extra money, Kevin, so we always have to bring it up.
Yeah, I did some quick math, and basically I'm dismissing the order, but if you have 10 players and you get Chris Paul and trade the two outgoing guys, and you keep Book, you keep Cam Johnson, keep DeAndre, you keep Mikal, you keep Ty Jerome, you keep Javon Carter, Jalen Lecque, Campaign, and let's say Diallo, that's just because those are small numbers. That's only 10 players, and that's $100 million about. So if you throw Bertans in there, that's 120. If you use an exception there, depending on what exception, what, rooms 10-ish, that's 130.
Room mid-level for a team operating under the cap, which is what the Suns would be in this scenario, was like 5. It's Kaminsky's deal.
Okay.
So they you sign Bertans for 15, you sign that guy for 5, you're at 120 right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're at 125. Well, I guess it depends. Bertans, let's say he's 17.
15 to 20, whatever he is, yeah.
If he's 17 and then 5. So you're around 120, 125. The tax is 132.
It is indeed.
And so I think I'm at only 12 players. So you can sign a bunch of minimum contracts, but the point is here that your depth is a bunch of very small contracts and guys like Ty Jerome, Javon Carter, and that's so if they want to field a really good team, he's going to have to spend, and that's going to be the interesting part in this.
For someone who doesn't know what it means to be at the tax, can you explain? Because we haven't had to deal with this.
So the salary cap was set. What day was it? 109.
Yep.
It's set at 109. The Suns, you basically have to re-sign guys. Trades, you can go over the cap, like Chris Paul, you can go over the cap if you trade him. Yeah, those count. But if they really reshuffle a lot, then it gets tough. And then the luxury tax is 132. So that's why I was saying once you're at like 12 guys, you're at 125 maybe. And then you're getting close to the tax.
Well, what happens when you hit the tax is what I'm saying. It's essential. What essentially it is, Kevin, right, is you hit that number, you have to pay a lot more money, like out of pocket, essentially.
Yeah, your tax, let me look, it's 150 per every dollar. It depends how much over you are. You get taxed more for being over, but you're basically paying that salary and then some.
The reason,
depending on how much over you are.
The reason why you've seen this be so relevant in discussions the past week is that there are repeat offenders who, if you pay the luxury tax more, the more times you pay the luxury tax, the more you have to pay, essentially. And there are teams, Windhorse was reporting that there are teams already upset that the luxury tax bill didn't change in an effort to kind of help teams out. But really the teams that they're helping out are the Warriors and the Sixers and the Celtics and the Bucks, AKA some of the best teams in the league. And especially with the Warriors, it's like, oh, great. Like they get Steph, Clay, all these guys back. And also, like, they might have to – they could actually avoid being, like, that heavily into the tax. So, I mean, that's I would be shocked if they were a tax team, Kevin. I mean, could I see them spending 5 to $10 million over the salary cap? Maybe 15?
Yeah.
Maybe? But,
I mean, just – it's kind of hard to get there to field the team is the one good thing. They're either going to have to keep a lot of guys or do a lot of scrambling and moving other contracts around. So, I mean, they're in decent shape, but it's going to restrict what you do the next 2 years. And that's why I keep saying that you got to keep draft picks if you can. At least swap some picks.
Off the top of my head, let's say you sign one of Bertans or Grant. You use the mid-level exception, the $5 million, on a lower-tier guard to effectively be better than Jamal Carter or Campaign. Langston Galloway is a name that's been thrown around quite a bit. I'm not sure what the Langston Galloway market is, but let's just say that for now. I used him as an example in one of my pieces. We'll just go with him for sure. Let's say they are able to keep the number 10 pick, and this is just swaps, or they trade back to 25. Let's just throw someone like Desmond Bane or Devin Vassell or Aaron Nesmith in to be that extra wing. You've got that guy, and now you're talking about vet mins to back up Aiden and the power forward, whoever that is. So Bertans, Grant, whatever. Like, you're looking at Bertans, Cam, and Mikal playing a ton of minutes with that rookie wing slotting in there somewhere. But then you're looking for a backup center, basically, and that could be the vet min, or that could be bringing back Baines or Sarge. But that, again, is where we get into – you have their cap holds. Actually, no, I'm sorry. You would not be able to do that because you need to renounce all their cap holds to get someone like Bertans or Grant. So you would be looking at bet mins. The bet min market for bigs is pretty fine. You can get someone half decent. Nerlens Noel has been floated on Twitter the past couple of days as an idea from Suns Twitter. I don't know if he's going to go for that little. I think he's earned the right to make a little bit more money, but I'm just speaking for Nerlens Noel as an admirer of his defensive ability. But that's essentially what you're looking at. So it would be, you'd have Chris Paul and Devin Booker. You would have Mikal Bridges, and then your big signing at power forward, you would have DeAndre Ayton. Then you would have the third guard who you signed for an MLE. And the reason I say that is I believe that if this trade were to happen, I think it would completely shift the way you look at it. And I think it's easier to get a wing with this pick at number 10 than it is to get one for the MLE. And I might be wrong. But either way, it's a mix of the MLE and the draft pick producing you your third guard and your wing. And then you get a vet min for the big. That's basically what the roster construction would be under this. And like, it doesn't really change a ton, even with Chris Paul in the picture, which is kind of crazy, with that deal out of the picture. But it's doable, and like, that's kind of what we've been talking about and what I've been writing about the past couple of weeks. Like, the roster outline I just gave, Kevin, isn't that far off from what we've been talking about, right?
Yeah, just with Chris Paul.
He's good.
Yeah, he's good.
Is the number three available?
The number three pick?
No, number three on the Suns. I don't know why that came to mind.
What are you saying?
The actual jersey number three.
Oh.
Kelly? Is Kelly number three?
I don't know. Dude, I haven't watched basketball.
Got my brain. Holy cannoli. I think it's Kelly's number. Fairly positive. I'm just like picturing all the retweets the reshares he does on Instagram for his number. Yeah, it's Kelly's number. That would be funny. That wouldn't just be funny. It would just be the weird dynamics of a trade. Well, Kevin, the beauty of the NBA offseason is that they tell you it's going to start on a certain date.
And they tell you like a week before now.
Now they tell you a week before, and they were still lying, because this is pretty much whenever the first Woj bomb or Shams thing happens, that is when I turn back on my notifications for them. I keep them off to like get some semblance of sanity when I don't need them to be on. Now I'm turning them on, which pretty much means in my eyes that the NBA offseason has really officially started. We've got the NBA draft a week from Wednesday. I think we're going to plan to pod twice before the draft. I think we're going to pod at some point in the next couple of days and talk about free agency, because we haven't talked about it a ton on here, and we just kind of randomly brought up Bertans and Grant and Wood. I've written stories on the site that have gone live already with Bertans, with Grant. Wood will come up as well. I might get Fred VanVleet in there, which that's going to be weird to write about now with Chris Paul noise out there. but we'll get some free agency preview stuff on the pod later this week, and then we will pod the week of the draft and kind of see what's happening. There's certainly things happening, Kevin. Remember when we were doing this like 6 months ago and just trying to figure out what to talk about every week? That is not going to be a problem for us for the next, hopefully, 6 to 7 months, depending on how the season goes. But hopefully,
well, I hope everyone's used their time wisely so we can just get going here.
Yep. All right. Socially distance, wear your masks, everyone, so I can go back to watching games in an arena, please. I don't want to watch them from home today or do Zooms from home like I probably will have to already for training camp. Just do it for your friend, Kel, if you're not going to do it for anyone else. All right. See ya.